it seems to never end. The more we delve into the history of our church here and our movement, the edification and the transformation grow. I want to thank Susan Bacchius. I'm not sure if she's here today, but a group of 10 folks went to Boston 2 weeks ago, and we haven't really recognized that as much in the sanctuary for a week of history study and learning. Some of the folks are here. Why don't you stand? Who went to Boston? That's great. You'll rub off on us, right, when we hug you or shake hands. A story from Reverend Samuel Longfellow's First Congregation, Fall River, in southeastern Massachusetts, where he served from 1847 to 51. At the time, Fall River is a growing cotton mill town, and the majority of the population struggles with a raw, painful poverty. A man comes by the church on a Thursday morning. His coat is threadbare. His hat carries the soot from his work. In a dignified tone, he explains he has lost his job. When the factory changed ownership, he was left off the list. Now, he and his wife do not know how they'll make ends meet. They don't know how they're going to put enough food on the table for their three daughters. Reverend Longfellow says, yes, he'll ask around town, see if he might be able to find work for the man. A week later, Samuel realizes it is not going to happen. And not only is he deeply sad to have to give this news to the family, he feels powerless that so many people are in similar situations. Living a rather lonely life of a single pastor at this time, he goes home and writes in his journal that night. He says, certainly one cannot look at the poverty and wretchedness which exist as a permanent element in our fairest communities without shuddering at the evils that come along with the factories. He said, one is left to feel that it cannot be God's will that it continue, and it ought not, by man's allowance and aid, continue to be. He figured out that 6 miles down the road was a smaller community called Stone Bridge that had even more intractable poverty. And he began visiting Stone Bridge as a missionary on Sunday afternoons, preaching to folks living in such destabilizing poverty that they couldn't get their own church community together. And Reverend Longfellow, in his journals and correspondence with friends, admits that he was nervous and anxious about the cross-cultural lines he was crossing. He did not have experience to this point in his life with that level of poverty. But he's also thrilled, he says, because he got to preach to these folks about the greatness and the worth of every human soul. He said, I know it's true that there is greatness and worth in every human soul. And he told his friends, those folks had not heard that message very often. They often received the stigmatizing messages that poor folks were less than. And he said, gospel truth, you are valuable. This was an important step in experientially based conversion for Samuel on economic justice. And although in his own church and at Stonebridge the numbers gathered were small, he loved to administer the Eucharist by hand. Previously, all the ministers of the church had gotten a deacon to do it, but he just went up person to person, handing the wafers and looking them in the eye. And he said that was one of the most meaningful parts of the whole time there. This was Samuel Longfellow living out the gospel of the new wave of Unitarians, the theology of listening to your soul and knowing that you can listen for truth and goodness and righteousness to guide yourself. He lived from 1819 to 1892. He grew up in Portland, Maine. His father, Stephen IV, was a highly respected lawyer, served in both the Maine State Legislature and the U.S. Congress. His mother, Zilpa Wadsworth, grew up in a military family. Her father was Army. Her two brothers were Navy. Zilpa's favorite brother, Henry, died fighting off the coast of Tripoli. And this heavy family burden brought Samuel and his mother to be lifelong opponents of the war, something that he lived out in his interactions not only with the Mexican-American War, but the Civil War. Through his ever-widening social circles, this man was connected to an amazing set of people in America and in Europe at this time. In religion, the arts, and politics, this started with his brother, Henry Wadsworth. The Poetry Foundation writes about Henry, "By far the most widely known and best-loved American poet of his time, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow achieved a level of national and international prominence possibly unequaled in the literary history of the United States." I'm not sure about that last line, but he was a powerhouse everywhere. Samuel, the minister of USG, had friendships and working relationships with people including but not limited to Charles Dickens, the main Titan Unitarian ministers of the day, William Ellery Channing, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Theodore Parker, and William Henry Furness. That list goes on. The top transcendentalists, including Bronson Alcott, Nathaniel Hawthorne, leading abolitionists, including Katie Stanton and Lucretia Mott, and multiple U.S. congressmen and U.S. President Franklin Pierce. Among the constellation of stars, Samuel was intelligent and capable, and he played more of a backstage role. One important ministry he found for himself involved poetry. Poetry. He used it to make a new hymnal with his dear friend Samuel Johnson. Theodore Parker, the biggest abolitionist Unitarian preacher in history, was dear friends with these two little guys, and he nicknamed the new hymn book the Book of Sams. The new hymnals, Hymns of the Spirit, was so important. It authentically expressed new religious attitudes. They were coming out of Calvinism, and they didn't have a new hymn book which represented their new ideas. This hymn book allowed them to sing with heart about connecting directly with the divine and the glories of nature, as well as proclaiming in their singing human dignity and hopefulness and the obligations of brotherly and sisterly love. Longfellow prophetically led people to sing about universal experiences such as giving oneself up to the beauty of soft wind tempered by the sea, undulating hills patched with varied green, the ocean meeting the sky. In the fall of 1877, Samuel Longfellow came to Germantown to visit his dear friend William Henry Furness, who had been preaching downtown as the pastor for 50 years. He had retired from that job and was the regular interim preacher here at Cheltenham Green. Reverend Furness fell ill one day, and Samuel stepped in to preach as a helper, and within 2 weeks, the congregation invited him to stay. During his 4 years here, Reverend Longfellow was in his 70s and slowing down physically. However, the impact of he had on the life of the congregation was strong. One USG member wrote, I hardly know how to convey my impression of Mr. Longfellow's influence on Germantown. For his whole personality was so essentially spiritual that it eludes one's effort to portray in words. What he was always much more important than what he did. He had no desire to convince others that they were in the wrong, except by standing himself quietly and firmly on the other side. Many of his quiet bits of philosophy sank deeply into our young hearts and were a real balm for us in that time of stress and strain which comes to those who, while feeling that they must struggle for something higher, are not quite sure of their aim. Samuel Johnson and Samuel's dearest friend, Samuel Johnson and his brother Henry both died in 81 and devastated him. He really never recovered from those two losses. 1 year later, he resigned from this congregation. With one of the primary duties, he went off to write the first biography of his brother, organized his papers. USG grieved his departure. Now, about 133 years after he left, I think it's good for us to pause and ask, what is the legacy that he left? What's the legacy that's still alive? I feel it. Well, it's hard to overstate the challenging historical context that he was in. One example from their life, which was traumatic to the circle of friends, was Henry and Samuel's dear friend, Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner, was at his desk on the Senate floor one day when he was savagely beaten into unconsciousness by a pro-slavery congressman. They were white guys with a lot of privilege, but it was stressful for anyone who was awake and paying attention in America, anybody with a heart who cared about the direction of the country. And within this context, he stood for what he believed in, and from his childhood to his elder years, people consistently commented on how clear and kind he was. Historian Everett Hale wrote of Samuel, "He was a prophet of a new time, mightily believing that the best things are possible if we will but live for the best." That was his mantra. We have to live for the best. Justice and kindness. Samuel's legacy is knowing that we can all do the same. We're a faith which proclaims a prophethood and priesthood of all believers. Listen for truth. Listen for good. In response, you may speak some words of poetry. Most likely, you will believe the best of things are possible and live to make them so. Blessings be.